So that was a kind of a very sad moment for the parents. And I also couldn't understand that why there is no possibility of any intervention. Like now you have found out, like, why should we not put a hearing aid or a cochlear implant and just treat it? And why the child should not speak? So the doctor explained that the plasticity of the mind has already gone. And if we would have provided an intervention when the child was 6 months old or 1 year old or even like 2 years old, we would have given that intervention. It was a very successful exercise. It took us 2 years, but ICMR approved our product.
Hello everyone, Ashok here. Thank you for tuning in to this 14th episode of Indian Startup Stories, a podcast thriving to bring out experiences and insights from entrepreneurs across India. Today, our guest is Nitin Sisodia, founder and CEO of Soham Innovation Labs, an innovation company which focuses on healthcare solutions and services for global healthcare market. Nitin was awarded as Innovator Under 30 by MIT Tech Review and also holds multiple rewards in Global Platform for Innovations in Healthcare. In this episode, Nitin shares his background, passion to serve the people in need, success stories and milestones in solving unmet clinical needs in multiple developing nations, challenges and pride moments on his journey so far, and much more valuable information for us to take away. So without further ado, let's jump in. Hi Nitin, thank you for coming on Indian Startup Stories today. Welcome.
Thank you, Ashok.
Please share about your background, studies and your early days career experiences.
Ashok, to tell you and to start, first of all, like congratulations on starting this series. I think this is really fantastic that you are covering all these aspects of Indian entrepreneurs and their journeys. So this is something which is very important in the current context. And I'll be really happy to talk to you on all the points that are going to help or can be useful for young entrepreneurs. To tell you about my journey, I was not that fortunate, I think, to listen to podcasts like 15 years back when I started, 15 to 20 years back when I started thinking about innovation or creating something new. The information was very limited. Google was like getting introduced in our lives, and it was very limited information. So I, my father was in some government job, and he kept on like moving from one place to another. And I've been to like small towns and also some of the cities. Some of the places I have like really fond memories. There is one city called as Hoshangabad. It's on the bank of River Narmada. And I spent like my primary schooling and secondary schooling over there. A very, very small town, but full of greenery, a river out there. The river was like very near to my home. So I have like my childhood like that. And I also have a village. So we have like some ancestral land over there. So we do farming. And I could also see the lifestyle of a village. So I have like a lot of connection to small towns and villages. And I have seen their joy, their celebration, but at the same time, the type of things that they struggle with. So that is what my inspiration throughout. Whenever I look at my skill sets, when I do things, I always reflect on that experience. I try to understand that, hey, is it going to really help the people out there in the last mile? And that is how I kind of define myself at this moment.
Oh, that's nice. Good. Please share about your company and the product that you're coming up with, what problem it is addressing and how do you solve?
So Soham Innovation Lab is based out of Bangalore. We also have an office in Bhopal, and now we are opening a new setup here in Delhi. We are a team of engineers, doctors, also some of the social entrepreneurs. So it's all coming together and trying to redefine some of the unmet clinical needs of India. So when you talk about unmet clinical needs, there are a variety of things which are happening all around us, which we are not aware of at times. But I guess there are hundreds and thousands of people who would suffer every day because they either lack information, they don't have access to healthcare, or they are not able to afford any kind of these interventions. So who is really looking at them? So obviously the answer comes out as you know, maybe the public sector or the social sector, like government, should be looking at them. But they also have limited bandwidth to really solve all these problems. So Soam Innovation Lab is really committed to first understand these problems and then solve some of them. Obviously, we are not equipped right now to solve each and every problem, but definitely we would like to solve some of the burning issues which are out there in healthcare, in livelihood, and which can really increase the income and health of people.
Any specific areas that it is trying to prioritize and solve, like baby care or adult care?
Yeah, so we started our journey in 2012. So I just would like to give you a background that I am a Stanford India Biodesign Fellow. I did my training in finding unmet clinical needs and solving them using technology, using some of the processes and business models. So that is what my strengths are. And so when I was doing my training at Biodesign, and I got a chance to spend time at All India Institute of Medical Sciences, New Delhi, I could find some very important unmet clinical needs which I wanted to solve. I kept on generating ideas, and one of the idea which was very I would say important for the society, and which was also very close to my heart, I will tell you like how, why, and how it happened, but that is in the area of newborn care. So we invented a device which can screen newborns for hearing loss, so that we can prevent speech loss. So the babies who are born with hearing loss, they eventually lose their speech. They are not speech without speech right from the birth, but it is because there is no early intervention, they lose their speech. So that is what we are trying to fill in. We want to we designed a device which can screen these babies early on at the time of birth, and we can save them from lifelong disability.
Okay. That's important. Do you have any statistics, like what percentage of newborn in India actually undergo the necessary screenings at the right time?
So the data is pretty fascinating. If you really look at this problem, this is the problem of the developing world. So there are some 800,000 babies are born with hearing loss all over the world. And 90% of them are born in the developing world. So you can imagine there are infections like rubella, meningitis, sepsis, many kind of other infections which would happen. We are saving all these babies because now we have access to intensive care units. So we are saving a lot of these babies. So the mortality rate has gone down. But what about really checking these babies for hearing loss? Because all these conditions would lead to some of these conditions like having a hearing loss. So that is what the scenario looks like. So it is not just only India, where we are having close to 120,000 babies born with hearing loss every year. There are many other such countries where the numbers are really high. And the first thing first is that we really need to create awareness about this particular issue, so that the parents should demand that their baby should get screened at the time of birth. It is just like vaccination, like the way you provide vaccination, a polio vaccination or any other vaccination to the child, and it saves the child from lifelong problems. So similarly, hearing screening should be demanded by the parents. Second is, like, we should make sure that facilities or birthing facilities should have hearing screening modality. And the third very important part is that there is also should be aftercare cycle around it. So these are the three aspects that we also focus on. And this is something which is very important for India at this moment.
I'm just curious, like, these screenings generally happen at big hospitals. How well it has penetrated into the actual Indian market, where there is a very limited medical equipments or the supply available in the tier 2 and tier 3 cities?
It's a very important question that you asked. So when we look at the distribution of healthcare, it is right now very skewed, and most of the facilities are available in tertiary care hospital, secondary care hospital, and the primary care, or even like places which are remote or resource poor, they won't get any attention. Now, how would we really solve this problem? I guess the solution lies somewhere around us. So I guess we really need to look at how would you make some of these devices inexpensive so that it can reach out and go to some of these remote corners of India. And second is, like, you make it that simple that any healthcare worker should be able to use it. It should be like that simple, that like the way you change a bulb, you know, It should be that simple, like operation wise. It should not have any gimmicky stuff. It should just give very clear indication that this is what you need to do next. And it should give very clear path refer and what should be the next clinical protocol to be followed. So if we really focus on all this, okay, I think the accessibility of the devices is going to increase. And also, if the decision making is like very clear, then it is it will be viable in even in the remote corners. So we don't have dearth of money like in India or like similar developing countries. They don't have dearth of willpower or money. Just that the systems needs to be correct. When a mobile phone can reach to you know, the remotest of the village in India, why can't a medical device reach there?
Yeah, true. Both the accessibility and the ease of use makes big difference.
Yes.
How did it all start, Nitin? The idea of SOHM Innovation Labs, and what was the spark moment?
Well, it's a long story, but I will just tell you the instance which really helped me to decide that I should be having an innovation lab and I should be like solving some of the problems. So I joined this program, Stanford India by Design, in 2010. Before that, I was designing cars for India and Japan market. And at that point of time, I was just having this kind of intuition that I should be doing something which is more useful for the country. Like I really love India and I really want to do something which is more productive for India and people of India. So that is like was the moment when I decided I had a very stable career and which was like, you know, filled with all kind of excitement, launching a new car or like being a designer over there, interacting with like some of the stalwarts of that area. But you know, I got an opportunity, like, to be very fair, like when I applied for this Stanford Near by Design program, and I got interviewed by the Stanford faculty, by here at Ames, I was like really excited. I realized that yes, this is my moment and I should be like making this transition. So that was one turning point. Another was like when I finished the program, I will be telling you more about the program. But I will tell you more about like how I stick to this problem and like why I started SOHM Innovation Lab. So I finished my program in 2012. In between, there was an instance in a child development clinic when I was sitting with the doctor and that pediatrician was seeing babies from all over, like across Delhi and also some of the regions in Haryana. So one parent walked in with their 5-year-old child and said, "Ye bolta nahi hai." And the doctor, after examining the child, said, "Ye sunta nahi hai, isliye bolta nahi hai." And it's already too late to do any intervention. So that was a kind of a very sad moment for the parents. And I also couldn't understand that why there is no possibility of any intervention. Like now you found out, like, why should we not put a hearing aid or a cochlear implant and just treat it? And why the child should not speak? So the doctor explained that the plasticity of the mind has already gone. And if we would have provided an intervention when the child was 6 months old or 1 year old or even like 2 years old, we would have given that intervention which the mind could understand. But we are already late, and you know, even if you put in like expensive hearing aid, if you give cochlear implant, the habilitation is going to be very, very difficult, and only very limited language that the child can acquire. So obviously the problem was not in terms of affordability or these parents not trying to get to the right facility, but it was that we lost a lot of time just taking that decision whether the child can hear or not. Now that was the real issue, and I could understand. And when I looked at the statistics which I shared with you, that there are so many babies which are born with a hearing loss every year, why are we not designing an intervention? So when I looked at the landscape, I realized that A, we don't have the appropriate technology which can solve the problem. Second, they are not affordable. They are like expensive imported equipments which needs to be procured from various countries, and they require expensive disposable. They won't suit the resource constrained environment. They are too complex to be operated by healthcare workers. Like the things that I told you, that which are very important for the establishment of a good medical device, and that that was not there. And that's why this program, though the policymakers were aware of all these issues, they are not able to implement the program. So as an engineer designer, I figured out that we can solve this problem. It is basically designing a appropriate device system which can suit the resource constrained settings of India and can really perform in here, and make it available. So that was the thought, I did a lot of prototypes, and then I realized that yes, we can do it. Like one prototype worked, and then I formed the company.
Yeah, great reason behind the actual start. Nice. So you started career as a designer, or actually automobile designer, then further onto the track of innovation labs. Then you started your own venture. So how did you manage this transition, and how successful was your journey? How rough was the path?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question. I basically have to lay down my last 20 years in front of you. So I'll try to be as short as possible. But I guess like it is more of a mindset. Started this journey because I always wanted to create things. I was like so fascinated that how would you make something? How would you make something work? Spending like time in small towns is you have a lot of time. Like apart from studies, like you can actually venture out in different areas. I still remember there was one science program called as Eklavya, and So this organization was really inculcating this feeling of doing science by observation. So they used to like, this was a kind of a subsidiary science program which they introduced in our school, and I was very fascinated because they asked us to like go collect leaves. We used to observe like how the plant grows and so many smaller aspects of science. And I think that is the moment when I realized that there is something so beautiful happening all around us every day, every moment. And it kept on happening in my mind that I should be doing something which is more creative. I did like engineering, which was like kind of a little bit boring, but could give me that analytical kind of mind. I was still looking for a program, and I joined National Institute of Design. In between, I wrote two books on mathematics. Like I was really fascinated with mathematics in between. So I was teaching, I was writing books, but I knew that I need to join an institute which can give me that mindset and the skill set to make products. I guess that is where the start. And after I joined NIT, I think that was really fascinating. I was so thrilled to see people design from different disciplines. It is such an interdisciplinary school where I learned a lot. I also shed away a lot of my learning which were not appropriate. I think that was also important. And I kept on moving from not sticking to the point that if you have a hammer, like you try to see everything as a nail, right? So I didn't stick to the hammer. In fact, I nurtured myself to find out the right nail and using the right kind of tool to to, you know, really solve that problem. So that is what my philosophy is. And in fact, that is what I also teach, or I tell to my interns, or like whosoever joins my company, that it is not about like solving the problem with your tool set, but it is about solving the problem with the right toolkit. Like, even for that, we have to hire someone else, like that is fine. But that mindset has to be there. So that is my philosophy of learning. And that is how I would, I can say that that is the gist of like what I learned in the last 20 years.
Okay, nice. Yeah, because a complete transition from an automobile designer to the designer who is doing very innovative things in the medical field. Nice. So what was your first moment of relief? How did you felt? Was it a first customer experiences? Can you talk about your first moment?
I think the first moment was more or less connected to making the product and making it work. So what we are doing right now to know whether the baby can hear or not, we put electrodes onto the head of the baby and we give a sound in the ear. It's a completely non-invasive procedure, and we collect the brain waves for 2 minutes, and we can tell with 100% accuracy whether the baby can hear or not. So that is what the procedure is, but it looks very simple when we talk about it. But when you think about the science behind it, so you are actually capturing very, very small signal from the brain, and you have to tell it with a lot of accuracy that, yes, the sound is reaching the brain. It is stimulating the right part of the brain, because there is a signature waveform which gets generated. This is called as auditory brainstem response. Now, when I ventured into this area, I didn't know that how difficult it is going to be. It was a very, very tough area, both in terms of hardware and software. But we were trying really hard. And I remember, like, I used to be having these electrodes all the time on my head. And we used to continuously test each other. And we're acquiring a lot of data. A lot of prototypes got failed. So that moment when we could get that right signature from our prototype, I think that was a very, very thrilling moment for all of us, because we knew that now we can definitely make a product out of it. But that moment was really important. Also, like, then we started screening babies in some of the public health setups. Now the program is running in multiple centers. Definitely the interaction with the parents and the way they put trust in you while you are conducting the test, while you see that, you know, some of our healthcare professionals, when they conduct the test and they feel so confident on telling the result to the parents, I think that's something really, really amazing for the whole team. That gives a lot of satisfaction to us.
Okay, that's nice. Testing in any field is always a challenge, and you're dealing with newborns, right? And all healthcare products need strict testing and certifications by authorities. Can you talk about the process and the struggle that you've gone through in getting your product cleared and to kickstart with the actual products?
Yes, in medical devices, definitely clinical trials is one area where an entrepreneur has to spend considerable amount of time, and it is not very easy. It's a kind of a complex procedure where you need to get ethics committee approval from the hospital where you would like to conduct the trials. Before that, you really need to build a relationship with the doctors. You really need to understand their ecosystem, what is in it for them to conduct the study. You need to design the study, you need to create all the documentation, you need to make sure that your device is tested against all other kind of current voltage settings. Everything needs to be like perfect before you go and like start testing babies. So we did all that rigor. We were on the bench top for a long time. We tested ourselves, we tested like so many other we made the product very safe before we land into a clinical zone. And yes, we could get ethics committee approval in multiple hospitals. We build that relationship, that confidence before we start testing the babies. And then after that, there are stages of consolidating the data, then taking it to publication. So it's a very long kind of a journey when you are testing the device, particularly medical devices. Mm-hmm. So one has to be really prepared for this long haul.
True. Yeah. And what are the geographies your product has reached? Is it across India or abroad, spanning many countries?
Yeah, we have our presence in India in almost every state, but mostly we have our presence in some of the northeastern part, also in the northern part of the country. So the state government of Tripura, Himachal Pradesh, Rajasthan, and now Punjab is lining up to implement the device. So we have like some 18 districts using the device. There are private hospitals like Apollo, Manipal, St. Teresa, Rainbow. They are using our device in multiple cities like Bangalore, Bhopal, Pune, Mumbai, Delhi. All these cities, bigger cities and small cities are also using it. We are seeing how we can expand into other remote areas. We are looking at Ladakh. We are looking at some of the really remote regions in Northeast, where we can either collaborate, where we can partner and can give out the device. And I'll be telling you about some of the very important features of the device, like telemedicine. So when you ask me like how devices can solve problems in remote areas, so obviously it needs to be affordable, accessible, and also very simple.
Right.
But at the same time, we can use some of the facilities like telemedicine. So in case a healthcare worker wants to take a feedback from a specialist, it should be available. The device should communicate with a bigger center where a specialist can come in. So our devices are like all connected together, and like there is a server which basically takes care of all that. So we are already thinking about the future when we talk about our devices. And apart from India, we have presence in Tanzania, Uganda, Guatemala. We are expanding to Philippines, and also there will be a few installations in Nepal, Bangladesh, and Bhutan this year.
Okay, that's pretty good, widespread. Nice. Coming to COVID situations, COVID has increased load on healthcare institutions too much. How much influence it has got into your business? What changes you adopted to sail through it?
Yeah, I guess the most important challenge for us is the safety of the babies and also of the healthcare worker who are performing the test. We are very sensitive to that. And I guess like in the initial months, when we were supposed to still screen the babies, because the babies were born, right? Like they because of COVID, it didn't happen that the babies were not taking birth. Yeah. So the babies were there. We knew that if we don't screen there, it may lead to a delay in lot many aspects. And also our partners like Apollo, Manipal, they were continuously like asking for these services. So we made very stringent protocol for our healthcare workers to perform the test. We also ensured their safety. We gave them a break in the middle when lockdown was happening, but then we had to resume faster than many other services. And in a way, it was good. It was a good learning experience that how can we really perform in crisis? And we also took some time to reflect back on our strategies. We got new partners in line with us. We also could design new products for the COVID situation, which has hit the market during that time. So there were like multiple things which we learned during that time. But yeah, it was... kind of a great experience.
Nice. Do you have any personal goal with respect to screening of newborn babies for hearing abilities? Any personal target you have?
Well, my personal target is that I should be able to reach as many babies as possible. I really don't want to leave any stone unturned, not to make this available in any part of India. Like, I know the way things are done in many of the states. So my personal goal is that it should reach to the max I am ensuring that either our either through partnership or through our own efforts, or making people aware of this one particular aspect can make them adopt a newborn health screening model. So we are trying that hard. While the goals keep on changing, I don't have a specific number at this moment to tell you that, okay, how many babies we are going to screen in the next 1 year or in the next 5 years. But we are looking at big numbers. Like every year, 26 million babies are born here in India. It's a huge task, 2.5 crore babies. We have to go it in stages. We have to ensure that we make changes in the mindset of policymakers. They should adopt higher numbers. And sky's the limit.
Yeah, true. And how big is your team? Please talk about the team on the ground. How did you build it?
So currently we have 14 people with us who are on roles. There are like some 10 more consultants who keeps on pitching in for different parts of the program. Our team comprises of audiologists. We have top-notch engineers, software algorithm designers, also product designers, and a few doctors, so which are contributing to the program. There are a few interns, diploma people who would also be joining every year, and they also contribute to the progress.
Okay, that's nice. A widespread team. Nitin, you are awarded as Innovator Under 30 by MIT Tech Review 2013. I guess you were in top 20, I believe. What impact innovation was that? And if you could elaborate from the user point of view.
Sure. So this was during the time when I just started, and it was a kind of a profile-based selection. So they looked at my profile, and they were looking at the work that I have done before and the type of ideas that I have. There was no specific idea as such for which they have given this award, but they have seen the collective effort that I have made in bringing a change, and that is how they have made the selection. But yes, that was really important in my journey to get recognized, and also could help me gather more support for the programs that I currently do.
Okay, so that's in line with the product that you have. So it's on the same line.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Please talk about your core founding team and the challenges you faced as an individual before kickstarting your business. What are the stages that you had to set, and what are the terms that you had to agree?
Well, so I started all this by myself. I just have another director with me, but the roles are very defined for them. But definitely, I would like to acknowledge my team over here. So there are a few members who are there with me right from the starting. They have seen all the ups and downs, the adversities of running a company. When I started, the whole startup scene or even the medtech scenario was not as expanded as that you see right now. It was very limited. There are a few people who are working in medtech, and there was very little advice because not many people have experimented. There are only bigger companies which were doing some fewer innovations. We didn't have much to look at before we start. But definitely, I made sure that there should be some basic funding in place. And also, we stick to all the important guidelines that are required. And I never hold myself back because there is no kind of a benchmark out there. So we kept on working, we kept on defining, we kept on looking at the quality standards, the clinical standards, everything. Like, so in a way, many of the people would reach out to me and like ask me, like, how did you do that? Like, for example, getting the first tender from the government, right? So we were like one of the first companies to get government tenders, like from one of the startups. Also, we were like first one of the first companies to get health technology assessment done by ICMR, it was a very successful exercise. It took us 2 years, but ICMR approved our product, and not many technologies have gone through that whole cycle. So I guess like these are like some of the first time things that we conducted, and is now really this information is really helpful for the newcomers.
Okay, that's nice. So how were the days before you started generating revenues? Was it short or long, and how did you manage pulling it through the fundings?
It was very difficult. Like obviously you can understand that you need to you know, do everything on a shoestring budget. You need to make sure that every penny that you are spending goes towards creating or producing something. So we were very tight. I remember like I didn't pay myself for a very long period of time. I was also doing consulting on the side. I did consult with Carl Zeiss, with McKinsey. Some of these were like really helpful. I still tell them that you incubated me in a way. So I never shied away from contributing to other programs, like doing or like burning midnight oil. So all that happened, like, you know, and it still happens. Like, I still enjoy that. I still keep on getting assignments from some of the multinationals, and like I keep on giving them advices or like create strategies for them that how can they introduce product in like such tough market. So that kept on happening. So I guess like
on the consultancy side.
Yes.
Okay, on the consulting side.
Yes. I established one very interesting program called as Aloka Vision Program for Carl Zeiss. Okay. And you can look at that on Carl Zeiss website. So that's another something which is creating huge impact. We could screen more than 200,000 people, could save many people from vision disability. So yeah, that's growing really fast now.
Oh, that's interesting. So is it completely bootstrapped or friends and family fund? How did you manage the initial days pulling through the fundings?
So Ashok, to start the organization, I was using my own funds in the starting. But the first grant that we got was from Grand Challenges Canada. I remember we applied to many organizations, many funding agencies. And I was looking for more for grants than risk investment, because I was not very sure how much valuation is out there, how big I can make, and there were like still risk involved which we needed to mitigate before we go out and make claims that we can really make it big. So at that point of time, I thought like it's better to invest my own funds as well as take help from external agencies, funding agencies, grant making bodies. So that was the first grant that we get from Grand Challenges Canada, STARS and Global Health Award. And later on, we could get help from BIREC, which is Biotechnology Industry Research Assistance Council. They're also giving different kind of grants that is really helpful for early stage entrepreneurs in medtech. Then we could also gather support from organizations which are not very well known, but they want to support entrepreneurs who are working in accessibility, like Indian Merchant Chamber. So they provided some support. Also, we got support from Millennium Alliance, which is a collaboration of FICCI and many other bodies coming together. Mm-hmm. Moving forward, we got one award from Rolex for the objective. We got support from multiple other organizations in terms of helping us design the products. Like Lunar has provided Lunar Design, which is a design house from San Francisco. They recognize our effort and they provided 100 hours of their consultancy. So they were like in different forms that we could gather support. And every stage, there was some kind of a funding which was just sufficient to take us to the next milestone. I think that is how we kind of sailed through. Though it was difficult to manage with that little amount of funding, but I would guess we could survive most of the time without being very spendthrift, and we didn't spend too much on any other expensive things which are not required. So yeah, that's how, like, and we are right now, cash positive.
That's nice. You got support in multiple forms in terms of funding, in terms of consulting and design. Good spectrum. Nice. Can you share some of your customer success stories or testimonies where you feel that it's a pride moment for you for being part of their journey?
Yeah, we keep on getting these emails and also repeat orders. I think repeat orders is like one sign which shows that, customers are really liking it. If they are expanding, they call you. If they are like opening a new center, they call you. They give you a reference to others and they are basically buying the product. So it happens quite often with our NGO partners. Many of them are establishing multiple programs. So one organization called as Vani Deaf Children Foundation, they have started with a program in Tumkur district.
Okay.
And their program got really successful. I think they have already identified 6 babies with hearing loss with the program. And they have expanded it to Assam. They have starting new program in Calcutta. And Azim Premji Foundation, Aisha Motors, many of these organizations kind of help them then expand the program. Similarly, there are organizations which has taken first they started here in India and they have then they have suggested it to their international partners, and that is how we got introduction in Tanzania, Uganda. So they also started the program. It was like all remote supported program. We never appointed a kind of a distributor out there in Tanzania, but it was just by word of mouth that we could get the orders. So I guess that was the biggest appreciation and also the growth that we have seen. Apollo kept on like telling us about the program. They always give us recommendation every year. So yes, it is coming from all different corners of and different spectrum of customers.
True. And when your customer is promoting your product, it means a lot. Yeah, bringing in more value. Nice. How are the COVID impacts to your business? What are the dynamics that got changed?
Right now, we are almost back on track and we are providing services in hospitals. So we have a kind of a dual strategy where we sell the product to some of the segments and we also provide newborn hearing screening services in some of the hospitals. So both the selling part and the services part are in place now. Selling, definitely we have expanded by getting more partners on board. So there is one company called as Medtronic, which is kind of a very big stalwart out there in the US. They have operations here in India, and one of their arm called as Medtronic Labs, they collaborated with us. Now they are our partners. They are marketing the product in India, in many regions of India, in the ENT segments. So they are, that is very promising. We also have also appointed many other distributors in other states. We are seeing a good amount of interest from different types of customers. In terms of screening services, we are getting newer hospitals in other regions. So far, so good. I guess like COVID has impacted us initially. But we knew that, you know, the babies would be born. And in fact, this is like one challenge which we saw in the vaccination space, that not many mothers and parents were comfortable taking the babies to the clinics to get their vaccination done. So in fact, that is another challenge which the world is going to see, that some of the vaccine preventable deaths, which are complications which we have controlled to a large extent, like polio or many of the other things, we might see a kind of a surge in that in the coming years, because we are not providing vaccines for those particular conditions because of the pandemic. So, in fact, we wanted to help hospitals, but it's very big area and we should be closely watching that those babies which have not got the vaccines for all those other things should get it within time, and it should get back on track.
Okay. That's a quite challenging things that you're addressing. You already mentioned that your customers have actually stood as a pillar in promoting your product and going abroad. Apart from that, what are your sales and marketing strategies, the formulas which has worked for you? How did you fuel?
Well, we almost experimented with all different kinds of business models, and we didn't constrain ourselves as a product company. We also leased out the product. We also have rented out the products. So we tried out those different innovative models because we had a control on the whole supply chain in terms of making the product here in India, all the quality controls. We know that we can expand, we can experiment with different kinds of business models. So we did that. Some of them are successful. That really gives a bandwidth to the hospital to not put in like a lot of capital on the equipment, but on the operations. We also started providing this as a service because we knew that some of the newer hospitals are not very comfortable starting this as a program. So, but once they get the confidence, they see that this procedure is happening in their facility, then why won't they be doing it by themselves? So things like those we have done in terms of our sales and marketing strategy and business models. And we are like very flexible that in that fashion. Like we don't see that, oh, we are just a medical device company. We are also a service company.
Nice. Coming to what could go wrong with entrepreneurs, any instances of failure in your journey and you had learned and you had to fight it and correct it so that you are back on track? Any such instances?
Yeah, there were many instances where, you know, you have to use your gut feel to make a decision. I guess like at times, it is more about saving the time than about the money or about many other priorities of life. I guess we have taken a little bit longer in the middle, like between 2014 to 16. We could have saved that time by keeping it very objective. We were like kind of enjoying our initial successes, and there were like some of the partners, like some of the funders who were like very excited. They took us in a different trajectory of promoting the product even when the product was not there. I guess like that really took a lot of time, and mm-hmm. we could have like remained focused on just launching the product, making it better, things like those. So we were like kind of drifted away by the whole promotion concept. I guess there is a way to launch medical devices to make sure that it is like kind of going, getting established. So I think like we were slow in the middle. I guess that is where I tightened the screws and I made sure that we stick to the plan rather than like getting drifted by someone else's objective.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty good learning. Yeah, what's your vision on India's innovation in medical field, especially coming to baby care and the role it plays in the early stages of life?
Well, my vision for India is somewhere around making it more self-reliant. Definitely, I want to see that India should solve its own problems. In fact, like if India can do that, we can support so many other countries and other nations which are very similar to us. Our geological positioning as well as cultural, social activities are so much similar to, let's say, South America or like many of the Southeast Asian countries or Nepal, Bangladesh, or like, you know, the whole Asian region. So there is a big burden on India in a way, or a big responsibility to play it well and take it to the finish line. We are such a big lover of cricket, right? So we should take a lot of inspiration from that we have to finish the game properly. And innovation is like that, where you should believe in your own abilities. So what is not there with India? We have excellent technical skills. We have excellent product manufacturing design skills. We have great set of manpower who can support, creation or production of these items. It is just the mindset. So the more and more we get into that mindset that we can solve any problem, and we have to solve our own problems. Like, why to rely on something which is not designed for your system? For example, even the, you know, from vacuum cleaner to many of these agricultural problems that we see on a daily basis, is very particular to our country. They are not a Western problem. They are like our problem. So we have to understand our problems well. We have to document them well. We have to find those unique insights that what do we need to solve them, and then put in the appropriate resources. We have absolutely all the tools available right now in our kitty, and we can definitely make use of it and solve our problems. It is just the way, the will, and making and realize them to get that confidence. And yeah, the whole world is the turf.
Okay, nice. So for people going through failures, what's your message from your experience to uplift them?
Well, there will be failures. Like, I think I have failed so many times. Either if it is about going and pitching your idea to an organization, or asking for funding, but you have to keep on trying for what you need, because there will be someone out there who would listen to you, or who will be in sync with what you think. So there are enough opportunities. I think it is a very positive time for innovators. So failures is very much important to realize those successes, and it really helps you in refining your proposition.
Okay, nice. So what is one important quality that you would look from any budding entrepreneur having big idea, but they are afraid to begin with?
There are many, but I can tell you about few. Maybe one thing is integrity. You really need to love the game. You really need to love what you are doing. If you are doing it for fashion, or just for telling that, oh hey, I am an entrepreneur, then it's not the right thing. And if you are not mold for it, then also it's not good, because it is very stressful. It may take a toll on your personal well-being, on your family, many of those sacrifices you have to make. So if you're not cut for it, but if you think that you are genuinely up for it, then also it is fine. You may make those sacrifices and thrive eventually. So it is more about like, hey, I really want to do it. It is not for anything, but for you, because it's more of an internal journey than an external journey. So people who are ready to take their journey, then it's all okay. But you just reflect, keep on reflecting inside that, yes, this I'm afraid, but I so want to do it. I don't have anything else. Like, if I go and do a kind of a different job or any other thing, it won't give me that satisfaction. But when I do this, when I solve the problems every day, every moment, it gives me that thrill, and that is what I want to do for the rest of the next 7 years or 10 years. So if you're up for it, why not?
Yeah, good advice. Nice. So moving on further to the next segment of this episode, rapid fire questions. Let me bring it on. What is the best thing that happened to you this month?
Winters.
Okay, nice. Your favorite sports or game you play?
I would say cricket. I play other sports also, but I like cricket a lot, yes.
Okay. Which book or article you have read recently and you liked it?
Well, I was reading a book on Bastar recently. His experience, this person's experience living in Bastar. So that goes by goes by the name of some Woodstock and Leaf Cups. So
okay.
Yeah, but it's a fascinating.
Oh. Okay, your favorite subject in school?
Mathematics, I would say.
Okay, and what does creativity means to you in one sentence?
It's excitement.
Okay, what time do you sleep and wake up in the morning?
No matter what time I sleep, I wake up at 6:30 to 7, like in between that. That keeps on changing when I go to sleep.
Okay. So how does your first few hours of the morning look like?
I definitely go for my morning jog. So that is something which is very consistent, like half an hour, 20 minutes, whatever time I get. And even if I'm traveling, I try to go by that routine. I just take a walk and come back. I guess like it is more for sanity than for physical. But yes, I like being out in the morning. I like spending that time out in the morning. It's very important for me.
Nice. So who's the leader, your favorite leader that you follow?
I see that what Elon Musk is doing right now, he is the one whom I look up to, both in terms of innovation and realizing dreams. I think definitely he is someone who inspires.
Cool. Yeah. So how do you make sure you must be having your mentors and people who you look up to? How do you make sure that your mentors are available to you when you need them?
I get on a call every now and then to talk to my mentors. And in fact, they are my mentors also because they reach out to me when I am not reaching out to them. So every couple of months, they would make sure that I am doing okay. They will ask me like, hey, how's COVID affecting you? Can we help? So they are really cool people and I really love them. That is another suggestion which I would love to give it to everyone, that is that you should have like a couple of people who would give you advice, like even if they can be of your own, in your own circle or of your age, of the same age. But yes, you should definitely have those people around you.
Nice. And the last question, how do you stay calm during the day of chaos?
I don't know. It's like I also lose temper, but generally it's like more about breathing. Like you breathe fine and then it'll all be fine, I guess.
The rest all fine.
Nice. The rest is fine.
Yes, wonderful. So for people who don't know about you and your company, so where do they find for, where do they search?
Yeah, you can look for Soham Innovation Lab on Google, but the website is sohamforall.com. So the Soham for All philosophy is that Soham means you and I are the same. So we want the same philosophy where we serve people and we have that feeling of oneness between you and me. And there shouldn't be any differentiation. So sohamforall.com is the place to go.
Wonderful. That's nice. It was awesome talking to you, Nitin. And thanks for coming on to the show and sharing your knowledge. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ashok, for inviting me over here. It's wonderful to talk to you. And I hope this really reached success, your whole channel, and all the best to you as well.
Thank you, Nitin. Okay, we are at the end of episode number 14. Thank you very much, Nitin, for coming on and sharing your experiences. And to our listeners, you can find out the episode summary in the description. Until we catch up soon with more exciting stories, stay tuned, be motivated. Thank you.